Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. I'm Brett King.
And I'm Jason Henricks. Every week since 2013, we explore the personalities, startups, innovators, and industry players driving disruption in financial services.
From incumbents to unicorns, and from cutting-edge technology to the people using it to help create a more innovative, inclusive, and healthy financial future. I'm JP Nichols, and this is Breaking Banks.
Welcome to a special episode of Breaking Banks. We don't always do breaking news, but this one was big enough. It broke on a Friday. The European EU's High Court struck down Privacy Shield. Normally when we talk about Shield on a Friday, it probably relates to an Avenger movie, but not so this time. And so have Dara Tarkowski, who's with us, who hosts the Tech on Reg podcast, and have Ajit Tripathi, who is part of the Breaking Banks EU team, to talk about what does this all mean for us. And so, Dara, maybe we should first define, for not everyone who stays up on their data privacy, what was Privacy Shield and what was it meant to accomplish?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jason. So Privacy Shield, in a nutshell, it was the successor to the Safe Harbor Agreement. Privacy Shield was the EU and US and the Swiss US framework designed by the US Department of Commerce and the European Commission on Swiss Administration, respectively, to provide companies on both sides of the Atlantic with a regulatory mechanism to comply with data protection requirements when they were transferring personal data from EU and Swiss citizens to the United States to essentially support transatlantic commerce. That was enacted in 2016, again, as the, you know, successor to the Safe Harbor framework. And and thousands and thousands of companies have been operating under Privacy Shield's protection for years in order to meet their data protection requirements.
So, Ajit, speaking for all of the EU, what is your first reaction to this, both as technologist and host, but also as, you know, a consumer in the EU? What's your response?
I think Max Schrems raised a fair challenge because contrary to popular belief, I never actually thought that as a European consumer, my data was getting protected from the big tech, US big tech firms, or from the surveillance of the NSA for that matter. So I'm actually quite happy that, you know, a challenge has been raised. On the other hand, we haven't really said in Europe what's going to replace the Privacy Shield. We have recognized that there are lots of loopholes. What we had in place wasn't really working, but we haven't said what's going to replace what we had in place before. Now, we also have the risk that the US is going to retaliate, right? So maybe this is just the first shot in a trade war, and this wouldn't be the only trade war or the anti-globalization move that we have seen in the last few years. So we run the risk that, you know, European tech exports or European fintechs might face certain barriers, the Revoluts, the Monzos, and so on, when they enter the United States, either in terms of using the data or in terms of accessing those markets, right? So, and then in Europe, we have a structural challenge. First of all, we lack the venture capital ecosystem that the United States has. So some of our, you know, tech firms haven't really grown to the level that US tech we have seen in the US. And then secondly, Europe is a very, very fragmented economy in the sense that we have lots of different languages, lots of different governments and so on. And the data tends to be quite fragmented, which means the European tech firms haven't really managed to compete as well as I would like in terms of AI and big data analytics. So going forward, I think it remains to be seen what the retaliation from the US will look like.
Well, it's interesting you term it much like a trade war because, you know, we often think of that as the flow of soybeans and, you know, other goods. But in reality, you know, data is, you know, also a good. And I think that's something that a lot of especially consumers miss is their data is a good. Now, Dara, you sit on both sides, right? You both help a lot of large financial service companies think about their use of data and how they disclose these things, but you're also a pretty staunch advocate for consumer privacy. How do you start to reconcile that? For many consumers, are they even aware that their data is such a good and the value it has?
So it's a great question. And, you know, one or two things that I want to point out, and I will totally answer you. I promise. I'm getting a little lawyery right now, so I apologize in advance. So what was really important about what the European Union Court of Justice declared last Thursday was that Privacy Shield in and of itself was no longer a valid mechanism to comply with EU data protection requirements. However, like all good jurists, they totally left the ability open for private industry to continue to operate and transfer data under standard contractual clauses, which are essentially individual legal agreements covering how the data will be treated. And now companies will obviously have to carefully analyze whether those SECs are going to be sufficient to ensure that any data moving overseas is in line with the GDPR. But that option is available. So just because Privacy Shield was struck down doesn't mean data can't move anymore. It just is going to be moving in a different way, and it's going to be based on individual agreements. Now, whether or not consumers have any real understanding or appreciation for what's contained in those individual agreements is a big, giant question mark. I think that there is a large portion of the consumer population that is perfectly comfortable trading in their personal information for, you know, a coupon or a free app. I think that there are plenty of people that just don't care and I'll happily hit download to utilize whatever free product or service that is available. And I think there's another portion of the population that doesn't have an appreciation for that. Issue is that the regulators don't really give industry any guidance other than through complicated legal disclosures as to how to communicate to a consumer about what's happening. So industry is stuck between a rock and a hard place. The level of, you know, sophistication of a consumer varies widely. And that's sort of where we are. Right now, we're going to be, it's the full Lawyer Employment Opportunity Act is what I would call it.
Audrey, from your perspective, you said you never believed GDPR was sufficient. Why do you say that?
Yeah, so, you know, I've been quite a vocal critic of GDPR from day one, and that's primarily based on my work experience. So when GDPR came out, I spent some quality time as a consultant with a few banks figuring out how banks would implement GDPR. And we soon realized that for every rule contained in GDPR, for example, right to be forgotten, if there was a requirement for the bank, for a particular bank to delete consumers' data, there were seven other regulatory rules out there, you know, related to securities laws or something or the other, that required the data to be retained forever for record-keeping requirements and so on and so forth. So that's the first problem. And the second one is that there are lots of derogations in GDPR. So, you know, I think that's a nice word for loophole. So, yes, there are restrictions on private sector and so on and so forth, but there are no restrictions on the government agencies. So even though the rule stipulates certain restrictions, when you really, you know, peel the onion, you realize that the government is free to do as it pleases. So I'm not quite sure, GDPR was ever going to protect consumers' data privacy. And last but not the least, it was designed to be unimplementable. So, you know, you read through the rules and then it talks about consent. So now as a consumer, how on earth am I going to provide consent for what my data is going to be used for by Facebook or by Google or by Apple? I don't have time to read a 5-page terms of use document. I mean, I just say, yes, all right, let's just take it away from me and take care of it.
Yeah, click, click, click. How fast can I get past this?
Get it over with.
Sounds like you both are making the case for digital identity.
Well, maybe we need to have David Birch on to talk about digital identity then.
Yeah, maybe for a follow-up episode. But truth be told, that may in fact be a terrific solution to much of the stress and problems that we're talking about right now, that consumers are still able to use, free products and services. Companies will, you know, get a version of the information that they need in order to operate their business and to support their product without the invasion of privacy that I think so many consumers and regulators claim to be concerned about.
Well, I don't know that our concern is even half of what it should be. When we talk about how this data is being pooled and now the application of AI, you know, already how often do you look at your, you know, Gmail and, you know, there's an ad, or like you log in, there's an ad and you're like, I didn't even type that. I just thought that. How the heck did that, appear? right? Now imagine these big pools of data that are being able to be mined. You have no idea. So you might have been willing to trade some amount of data in order to enjoy a free product. But if you really understood how much of that was being used and what it was being used for, I'm very curious if a lot of people would agree to that.
So if you look at David, you know, we all love David. And if you look at David Birch's Twitter feed today, it talks about earwax ads. So for some reason, for the last whole week, he's being shown earwax ads and nobody knows why. So, I mean, that's a lot of talk about privacy.
That is going to be the title of this episode, is David Birch and his earwax. But, you know, and now I'm actually having serious questions about the ads I've been getting displayed lately. So I also have concerns. Dara, what's up next in terms of from the legal perspective? So we know the SECs are going to continue. So it's not like anything changes. You know, Twitter and Facebook aren't being shut off in Europe overnight. But what happens next?
So in the short term, you're right. Data will continue to move under the SECs. I think there will be revisions done to the standard contractual clauses regarding privacy for a lot of organizations, both large and small. And what's going to happen, I believe, is a significant amount of regulatory scrutiny on those SECs now. So the court ruling striking down Privacy Shield was step one. Next, we're going to find a court that says, no, the standard contractual clauses that provide X, Y, and Z are similarly insufficient. So unless your contracts do all of the above, then you're not going to be able to move data. And that will create sort of a second wave of minor hysteria. I think ultimately what the EU court was trying to do was nudge the United States and say, what's up, Washington? It would be a super great idea if you guys got some comprehensive federal privacy legislation on the books, because not every state is the state of California. In fact, only the state of California is the state of California right now, which is, you know, and for those of you who don't know, the state of California's CCPA privacy law that just went into enforcement officially on July 1st of this year is about the closest thing that the US has that's sort of GDPR-esque with their, you know, rights to delete and right to be forgotten, with the same level of loopholes that GDPR has as well. So don't worry, Ajit, we're not trying to one-up GDPR in any sense of the word. But that's what I think is next. Washington, unfortunately, is too stymied in their own sort of other political drama to, I think, really care right now. That's my guess. So I think we're all going to be sort of waiting and watching for a while.
Well, so Ajit, you had pointed to the EU's level of fragmentation. I think that's something that is oftentimes lost, is level of fragmentation within the US, right? Where every state has its own approach to privacy. But truth be told, we all, you know, from a fintech and a banking perspective, end up going to the most stringent anyway, because, you know, at least you cover the other states at that point. And it makes me wonder if this isn't the bigger issue. Do we really, to avoid, as Ajit termed it, that trade war, do we really just need to come up with a global approach to what is data privacy? Now, I realize that is probably...
Yeah. Jason, that's so cute.
That will never happen. It's what should happen. But
so, I was going to say, yes, absolutely, world peace, and we need to come up with that vaccine and so on, but not to sound too cynical. See, China, the US, and Europe have very different competitive perspectives. Competitive interests. So we're all trying to get ahead, and we're trying to compete. And we have different advantages and disadvantages. China has 1.6 billion people. India has 1.3 billion people. US, yes, you know, the interstate legal system is quite fragmented, but at the same time, everybody speaks English. Yeah, you know, you can scale a business very, very quickly through the venture capital and investing ecosystem, and so on and so forth. Europe doesn't have any of that. So I think the question is, can Europe innovate in the area of privacy? And can we solve our own problems technologically? I don't know a good answer to that yet.
I would also just mention that, you know, we talked at the beginning of the episode briefly about whether or not the U.S. was going to retaliate and what that meant for sort of smaller fintechs who are trying to enter the U.S. market. In some ways, the fragmented regulatory structure is actually an advantage in that regard, because there's not going to be a practical way for the U.S. in its entirety to sort of retaliate. These licenses for a lot of these fintech companies are not granted at the federal level. They're granted state by state, and the states have so many more issues to deal with, including making sure they have adequate PPE equipment for first responders right now, that nobody is denying a fintech a consumer lending license or a payment processing license because of what the EU court did. I don't believe that would happen for a second.
Yeah. Well, I think that brings it full circle and a great place to end this. Thanks for both taking time over a weekend to talk about Privacy Shield and what comes next, and look forward to seeing how the response goes.
That's it for this week. If you like the show, make sure to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform, or share it with a friend, or share it on social media.
You can listen to all of our more than 300 episodes, plus all of the other shows from Provoke.fm Media, and learn more about being a guest, a partner, or a sponsor, all at Provoke.fm.
We'll see you again next week with more Breaking Banks.